This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kudan, with me Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. Now, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, was a key talking point at the ASEAN Summit, which concluded in Singapore on Saturday. If it takes off, this network will include 10 ASEAN nations, as well as China, India, Japan, South Korea, Australia and New Zealand, and will cover a third of the world's economy, almost half its population. On the line, we have Stephen Innes, Head of Trading in Asia Pacific from Awanda in Singapore, to give his perspectives on the various things, including the RCEP move. Now, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Stephen. I want to begin with the RCEP news. Are markets excited by this initiative after all the talk of trade wars and rising tariff barriers?
Well, I think it's interesting that we've seen sort of more emphasis being put on these regional trade initiatives, and I think there's a real positive tone amongst each country, given the wave of America First policy that's sort of been non-supportive of global free trade over the past few months. So we're seeing a real emphasis on this now. And, you know, with the RCEP initiative, I think this is all about trying to minimize some of the more complex structural trade issues that are happening within the region, to make these procedures and infrastructures a lot more easier to put trade forward, and also make it known to the outside world that Asian economies are welcoming and open arms for business. So I think all this initiative and all these positivities that are emanating from this weekend's sort of summit, if you would, are quite positive. You know, given that we've been dealing with a lot of negatives on the trade landscape for the past few months.
Now, Stephen, you know, considering the criticism of China's protectionist practices, is China seen by the other players as a standard bearer, a kind of honest broker in the discussions about free trade?
Well, you know, it's one of the points here that the market's been discussing, and the fact that with the U.S. actually turning into more of a trade hawk, that perhaps China may seize this opportunity to reduce the barriers and put them in place as being seen as one of the bastions of global free trade. I think you know, this is a pretty interesting discussion that's going on, and I think we're starting to see China make some moves as far as internationalization and opening markets. So I think it's quite possible that we could see the protectionism within China itself drop. And this could also be played in part to the more hawkish overtones dealt by the U.S. as far as these as far as bilateral trade between the U.S. and China concerned. We've got Team Trump over in China this week looking to hammer out some type of deal to reduce somewhere in about $100 billion worth of the trade deficit. So markets are going to be constantly focused on this and gauge China's willingness. And I think also with this deal, the local Asian economies will also be gauging China's willingness to reduce some of the obstacles to inbound trade. So we'll see what happens. But I think, you know, given the current overtones in the market right now, things seem quite positive.
Hey, Stephen, it's Han here. So given all those discussions that are taking place about trade, all this positioning, or even the hawkish tones, as you mentioned earlier, coming out of the White House, how is that manifesting itself in the currency markets, if at all?
Yeah, you know, it's, currency markets have been sort of in stasis when it comes to trade. It's been sort of unique. I think on the one hand, a lot of currency traders really, you know, have doubted that there was going to be a massive escalation. So they didn't really want to shift into risk-averse mode until some actual timing timing of the tariffs had actually come into place. One of the things that we have noticed in Trump's sort of boisterous view is that he tends to walk back a lot of the his louder comments. So we continue to see that happen, where they come off very aggressive, but by the time they become actionable, they've actually, you know, abated quite somewhat. We saw that on the steel tariffs, and we could even see that on China. There could be some lessening of some of the demands. So really, you know, we've seen some of the more, how should I say, export-oriented countries' currencies in the region, like the Korean won, for instance, suffer a little bit. But realistically, it hasn't really wobbled that greatly. So I don't think the market's positioning for any greater escalation on the trade war front these days.
Hey, Stephen, Joyce here. Speaking about the currency market, what's your view on the ringgit in the short run, given the looming elections and the surge in oil prices?
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting dilemma. I think what we're seeing right now is mostly driven through the bond markets because a lot of foreign investors like to get Malaysian ringgit exposure via the bond markets. And there's been a couple of obstacles there. Obviously, the election has dented a lot of inbound sentiment where investors are becoming a little bit more defensive because we've gone from a state where we actually thought the victory would be quite convincing for the incumbent government to it seems like it's almost a much tighter race than anyone had expected. So any thought that was that traders had of the currency moving towards 380 during this election process completely got taken back, and we're seeing that reflected through the bond markets right now. Also adding to some of the woes is we've had that breach of 3% in the 10-year U.S. bond market, and that's also dented some inbound sentiment. We'll have to keep an eye on probably how U.S. yields are going to play out over the near term to have a more convincing view on the ringgit. But certainly with higher oil prices and Malaysia's robust domestic economy, along with favorable external conditions right now, one would assume that provided we get through this election rhetoric, we could see the ringgit trade stronger going through into 2018. With the one caveat here, provided U.S. yields don't go marching higher towards a 325 or 350 level in the 10-year area.
Hey, Stephen. Yeah, we have seen the U.S. 10-year yield moderated down to below that 3% mark then. So, you know, as you mentioned, if it does march forward beyond above 3% and remain sustained above that, what could be the key catalyst for, you know, such a move then? Again, you know, the U.S. 10-year Treasury yields being above 3% consistently.
You see, it's an unusual focus we have right now because a lot of market attention is being pretty much placed on commodity prices and perhaps oil being the trigger to spark inflation, and this could be causing the reprice in the 10-year yield. But in my view, this is also about supply. That if we look at the fact that the U.S. tax cuts, the negative implications are going to have on the burdening U.S. deficit, those deficits have to be funded, and they're going to be funded through the Treasury markets. And to be quite honest with you, I think it's going to be a struggle for the U.S. to continue to sell these in the open market. I just don't think there's great enough demand at this yield right now. So accordingly, we're seeing investors play from the short position side, constantly looking to short bonds as opposed to buy bonds. So if that continues, one would suggest, or at least I would think, that that would not be positive for the U.S. dollar going forward, despite the prospects of higher yields. So we could see, we could be in for sort of a disassociation or a break in the correlation between a stronger dollar and higher yields if that actually comes true.
So, Stephen, going back to the ringgit, earlier you outlined several factors, you know, both domestic and global. We've got the GE14, that's a general election overhang here, and the domestic side. Globally, you've got the 10-year treasuries, you know, oil prices. But where does the Fed play into all this? Because between now and GE14 polling day, we do have a Fed decision on May the 2nd. Markets now pricing in only about a 33%, 34% chance of a rate hike. You know, it goes up to above 90%, you know, come the next meeting in June. So do you think this upcoming Fed meeting this week will weigh heavily on currencies, especially the ringgit?
Well, you know, it could in the U.S. dollar market. I think right now the U.S. dollar is sort of in the driver's seat because of this surprising uptick in yields. And really the Federal Reserve Board, the members have done little over the past few weeks to walk any of this rate hike talk back. We could be in for a surprise, however, if, and this is something to keep an eye on, if the Feds show any distress or any concern about possibility of you know, negative impact from higher interest rates on the equity markets, because they have to walk this fine line also where they don't want to put interest rates up too high to the detriment of the equity investors. So if there's a mention of that, it could be interpreted as somewhat dovish. But to be honest with you, I think the Federal Reserve Board has pretty much targeted their policies, and I think they're just going to hold true to these policies. I don't expect them to accelerate the pace of interest rate normalization unless we have a huge surprise in inflation, which doesn't seem to be happening, even with higher oil prices factoring into the equation. It just doesn't seem to be filtering through the economy. But also, I think we have to look beyond the Fed. I think we have to look at other central banks globally, too, which will have some sort of impact on regional currencies, where we do have the dovish Bank of England and dovish ECB, and, of course, the dovish Bank of Japan, which should keep their currencies towards a weaker tangent over the short term. And once again, I think this plays favorably into more sort of high-yielding currencies like the Malaysian ringgit. So it's not only a guess against the dollar, it's also the ringgit plays out against other baskets of currencies globally.
Thank you so much, Stephen. That was Stephen Innes, head of trading in Asia Pacific with Awanda in Singapore. We'll be back with more business news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.